All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of LaSalle Sports Podcast. Our first guest here today is the head varsity coach here for baseball, Coach Kyle Werman. Thank you very much for coming on here. I really appreciate taking some time out of your schedule.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, you know, talk a little bit about some baseball and be part of the podcast.
Yeah, so you started here in 2015. You've coached at a ton of places. You've played a bunch of different levels, so I wanted to start there. So you started, you walked on at Virginia, University of Virginia. You played second base for 4 years, and you were captain in 2005. So what are some of your highlights, I would say, about college career, just in terms of how successful it must have been just to be able to walk on and have that position for so long? So what were some of your favorite parts about the college career?
Yeah, it's when I look at where the program at Virginia is now versus where it was when I got there, I was there at a very unique time where there was a lot of transition in the program. I think if you understand the college baseball world, you think of Virginia. They've now been to Omaha several times. They've won a national championship. You know, so you think that they've kind of always been this premier blue blood kind of program. When I got there in the fall of 2000, that wasn't the case. It was a program that hadn't been above 500 in a while. They won the ACC tournament in 1996, and that was really the only success, only time they had been to the postseason. The school was always excellent, but there wasn't that support for baseball. They had this old turf that was left over from the football field in the years before me. There's wooden bleachers. It was just when you look at the facilities and the resources, it wasn't set up to be competitive. So I got there, and frankly, you know, looking at the college situation for me, academics was really important. I lived in the state of Virginia. The public schools and the cost for some really elite academic schools like Virginia were right in my wheelhouse, and there wasn't a lot of need to look outside the state. So I was looking at William & Mary, was accepted there, Virginia Tech, UVA. Those were the ones that kind of checked the box for me academically. And really my goal was, hey, could I play at one of these spots? I went to the camp at Virginia. I went to William & Mary's camp. I visited, watched them practice. And at the time, you thought, hey, you know what? I might have a chance looking at the guys on the field. Maybe I can walk on, right? However realistic that was, I really didn't know. But like a lot of our guys do, they look at different levels and have ideas of where they think they can play. And I went to William & Mary's camp, and the coach straight up told me there, I want a second baseman that could hit home runs. And that certainly wasn't me. At the time, I was 5'6", 110 pounds. Could defend a little bit, but wasn't going to hit homers. And I'm like, all right, I guess I'm not going to William & Mary. Virginia's third base coach is about 5'6" himself. I'm like, all right, maybe he can see what I bring to it. And so I went to their winter camp, and I went back to their camp at the end of that summer. I was already enrolled at Virginia at that point and got in on my own. And in August, they had a summer camp I went to. I found out later, my assistant coach at Madison High School in Northern Virginia, he was their catcher on their 1996 team. And he had called on my behalf without me knowing to the head coach he had played for. Say, hey, give this Werman kid a look, you know. And so I went to that camp, did well, and the coach told me, hey, you know, you can join us from day one for the fall. So that was kind of my foot in the door, and got there, and certainly was still a year away. I was a very late bloomer. I tell our players here, you think you're small, you think, you know, you're behind the eight ball. My first day, we had our first team meeting, and we stepped on the scales, and I weighed in 117 pounds, first day of college. So I had a way to go. I put on my freshman 20. I was about 130, 135 by the spring. Started to grow a little bit, but I certainly wasn't in the picture of playing. I was actually catching. That's really the only reason I made the roster, was because I could catch and be a bullpen catcher. I redshirted myself. I told the coach, hey, don't play me. Not that I was in line to play as a freshman, but I told him, hey, I'd like to redshirt. I certainly wasn't in their plans, and I was happy being a bullpen catcher, and I wasn't even allowed to take BP on the field that year. So every single game, I go right to second base, take a bunch of ground balls. The head coach, Coach Womack, would hit him to me every day, and we'd have a little competition every day for, you know, if I can make it through without any misses, and I'd go catch bullpens. And frankly, I really enjoyed it, you know, and I was kind of buying my time. But that was kind of my first year. And in that summer, at the end of that year, there was a lot of transition in the athletic department at Virginia, and there was talk to really stripping a lot of the finances. So they were the outgoing AD, kind of had a model where really they're going to take funding away from all these tier three type sports. They had tier one, two, and three level sports at Virginia, and baseball was designated a tier three at that time. And there was a model to basically remove all baseball funding scholarship wise. So you can imagine the turmoil, and it kind of stoked some activism within alums. There's some, you know, really big local alums. Les Disharoon was a big local alum. The big name that gets a lot of credit was John Grisham, who's a Charlottesville native, built a little league facility there. His son, Tyler Grisham, was coming into Virginia my sophomore year, was an incoming recruit. So that combination led to kind of a groundswell of support. And we went from basically the program effectively being cut. I was actually at home while the team was at the ACC tournament. I didn't travel, and I got that message at that point. And they ended up putting money in, and that fall they broke ground on a new stadium. That spring, my sophomore year, we had a brand new stadium. The facilities underneath weren't done yet, but now you had this facility that was, you know, really good and maybe a pathway towards some success. You know, and that was a year. It had a good fall, and actually cracked the lineup right at day one, my sophomore year, redshirt freshman year, and you know, played the majority of the games that year and kind of held on for the next four. So, you know, but in that time, that the transition there was really unique. You know, we were better that year, a little better the next. And then my redshirt junior year, so my fourth year there, they made a coaching change. Coach Womack stepped down, and they brought in Brian O'Connor, who was a young assistant at Notre Dame who had just been to Omaha. Paul Manieri was the head coach there who just went to LSU after that. It's a pretty legendary coach, so you talk about bloodlines. But Brian O'Connor came in and took a team that was 29-25 and 24 to, I think, 42-12 the next year, and hosted our first regional, had Vanderbilt in our regional. And so as a player, to be part of that transition and to see really the same players in 2003 on the roster in 2004, and there's some good players on that roster, that 2004 roster. We had the ACC Player of the Year, Joe Koshansky, who pitched on Sunday and played first base, was made to the big leagues with the Rockies. We had a young third baseman by the name of Ryan Zimmerman, who turned out to be pretty good himself.
He's pretty solid, yeah.
Our shortstop was another nice ball player, Mark Reynolds, who had a good 15-year MLB career. In 2005, we had an incoming recruit who, you know, kind of recruited himself to Virginia. When the new coaching staff came in, he kind of called them like, "Hey, Coach Womack liked me. Can I still come?" He was okay. Sean Doolittle. He was a freshman my fifth year and played first base and was a top pitcher for them. So the talent was certainly there, you know, but what I saw as a player was what the impact of a different kind of coaching philosophy could be. And it really kind of stoked the fire to want to coach, right, to see the impact you can have from a culture standpoint, the details, the things that I learned in those last couple of years. And it's no disrespect either to Coach Womack. I thought he was an excellent coach and his staff were great. But to see different perspective, I think, is so important. And I learned so much and have carried a lot of what I learned there as a player to my coaching career, where I got a chance to start as a volunteer coach at Virginia. Spent 2 years at George Mason, 2 years at Radford, 2 years at St. Joe's before coming here. But I'd say that foundation is what I learned under Coach O'Connor and Coach Mack. Coach Kuhn was our pitching coach, who I learned a ton as a catcher for him as well, even though I was primarily a second baseman.
So, yeah, you mentioned all that coaching experience. 7 years in total you coached at the college level. So you've played in high school, you played in college, you played a couple years professionally, you played in the Appalachian League for the Mets, and then you played for the Washington Wild Things.
Mm-hmm.
Great names in those leagues. I love those names.
Absolutely.
But you've had so many different experiences at so many different baseball levels. So what would you say is one of the biggest, I guess, positives to having so many backgrounds, so many experiences with different players and different systems when you've been playing for all of these leagues and you've been coaching for all these leagues, and now that you're here at LaSalle, is there something that you've taken from all of those different positions to create a team here and to create a mindset here?
Yeah, I mean, certainly anything in life, right? Different perspectives and experience is going to shape, you know, how you interact. I think the game is the game. Baseball is what it is, and how it's conveyed and relayed and how you teach it, how you talk about it. It's going to change based on who you're interacting with and what your backgrounds are, and I think no different than teaching. You know, as a teacher in the classroom, you have to meet your students where they're at and speak their language. Baseball and coaching is that way as well. Every player has different ways that they need to hear a message, you know, and what you try to do as a coach is reach them with their language, convey how you see the world, try to get some agreement on ways that, you know, they can learn. as a team. Every team's a little different. How you offense as a team, there needs to be different tools in your tool belt. Some years we're going to hit a ton of homers. We don't have a home run this year on our squad, but I still like our offense, right? We just may have to do things a little differently. So I think when you get exposed to different types of teams and different levels, you just develop different tools in your tool belt, different ways to solve different tasks, both individually and how you coach a player, but also as a team and how you produce runs, maybe how you're going to pitch, what kind of ways you can take advantage of what the game's going to give you to have success.
Yeah, you mentioned just not hitting a lot of home runs, but you guys still put up a ton of runs. Small ball, you work the counts, you get a lot of walks, you get a lot of base hits, and runs, for the most part this year, have come in bunches. A lot of 6, 7, 8, 9 run games. Your pitching's been outstanding. A couple guys like Logan Potter. You've had Jack Pye, who's pitched a couple of amazing games. I think that you have, without the power necessarily, you know, to just hit the ball over the fence every time, you have a lot of small ball. You have a lot of pieces that together as one lineup are creating a lot of runs. So I think that that's something that is really impressive in terms of a coaching standpoint, how you're going to set your lining up, and then just how the pitching's been this year. So to stay with LaSalle, what are some of your favorite parts of being in an environment like this? Just in the high school environment, you teach here, so you're on campus every day, you get a lot of experience with different students, and then you go down to the field. So what are some of your favorite parts about just being here as a coach and as a teacher?
I mean, I think what's really unique here is you have really motivated kids. You know, they come here, there's an investment to come to LaSalle from your family. So there's, on the surface, you already have a motivation from a parent to invest in their son's education here at LaSalle, and that comes with the students as well. So as a teacher, you get kids that they want to learn. They want to move on in academia. They understand the value of what the education is. So, you know, I'm not struggling to motivate a kid to learn in the classroom. They're generally engaged. They want to have success. You know, some are more motivated than others. Certainly there's a variant there, but it makes it easy in the classroom where you're not dealing with discipline issues. You're not dealing with trying to motivate a kid to want to learn. You're really trying to find a way to keep them even more engaged and make it a fun process. And that transitions on the field. You know, we talk about, with families looking at LaSalle, you know, as an academic school, we're a college prep school. We're preparing kids to have success at the next level. And when I look at our baseball program, you know, that's what I see for our program. We certainly want to win and represent our school. But in the big picture, we're preparing our kids for a level of baseball that's beyond what's here. And I think on whole, every player that comes here, I think, has some level of aspiration that they maybe want to pursue baseball at the next level. And we're at a point, talent-wise, of the kind of pool of players that we come, that's a reality for every kid in our program. And there is a home for every kid to find a spot in college baseball if they want to pursue it. And that's not to say they will. There's certainly decisions you make and sacrifices to becoming a college athlete that isn't for everybody. But you know, as a coach, it's really rewarding to show up and look at our roster at the varsity level and look at our roster at the JV and see these young talent and look at guys that I have as much ability as anybody I coach at the next level. They're just younger, you know, and you get a chance to coach them the same, push them to do the things that I would ask a college player or more. And it's really rewarding to see them take off and flourish and frankly, more rewarding when they do move on and they have success right away. And I get the feedback from the college coaches when they're excited about what a player is providing for their team, the intangibles they bring and how they're how they know the game. So I think those are the things that make it fun as a coach and as a teacher to deal with that kind of environment every day.
Right. So you have a very deep roster, JV and varsity, and even the freshmen coming in. LaSalle is a lot of good talent in baseball comes through here. So a lot of guys are going to college. A lot of guys are already committing this year. A lot of guys I know have offers. So as a coach, what is that feeling of you're able to just teach these kids to play at the next level? The kids that you know really aspire to be baseball players in college at the professional level. What is it like for you just to be able to be a part of that, of just a young player's career?
Yeah, I think the baseball world has really evolved, particularly at the youth levels over the last couple decades. I think travel baseball has certainly become more and more of a part, and it's kind of pulled kids out of the community leagues. So what used to be everybody in the same community playing for the same little leagues or Babe Ruth teams or whatever that might be, competing for the same opportunity, maybe playing an all-star tournament at the end of the year, that was a natural competition where every game mattered. You played for some local standings. The best players then played together on this all-star team, and it created a true competition where the success on the field was for your team first. And the individual successes and advancement came from your team's success, but then you succeeding over a long run. And it's moved away from that, I think, good and bad, right? Kids have opportunities to play against better players at times by moving out of the region. You're consolidating talent on a better teams potentially with a travel program. And so you're playing with better players, which is a good thing to get pushed. But the expense of that is I think everybody has now an opportunity to kind of handpick where they play to some degree. And when that happens and there's a pay for play model, sometimes there's an element of competition that's lost. So I think a lot of our players that come to LaSalle, they on average are some of the better players on their teams, whether they're on a really talented team or a smaller, weaker team. They're generally the better player. They're generally used to playing all the time in a marquee spot. When they have a bad game, they expect to be back in the lineup the next game. And when their team has a bad tournament, there's another tournament next weekend. So the real stakes of failure and loss don't really breed the kind of competition that is the reality when you move up to higher levels. So when you come to a school like LaSalle, and this is true for any high school, I think high school is kind of the last area where there's true competition for youth players, where they're really playing for something bigger than them. And that's not true for every high school, but I think certainly at LaSalle and all the schools that we compete against, I think kids truly value playing for LaSalle and for their high school team. And so there's a different weight to what the loss means, right, and what success is. And that leads to a different level of, you know, pressure and competition that's necessary to have success. And so I think that's been something that I've seen, you know, in my time here, is learning how to transition kids from a more individualized competition model that they have dealt with all the way up to now playing for something bigger than them and the challenges of that. You know, I think we have talented players that will short circuit when that pressure is on because they've never experienced true pressure that's beyond personal pressure to succeed. And it's rewarding that they can learn that lesson here. Sometimes they don't fully learn it here, but they get exposed to it, and they'll learn it at the next level. Because when you go to college, at the end of the day, that competition is real in the same way as it is here. You're playing for your school. There's direct competition for playing time on your own roster, first and foremost. And then when you get on the field, you're wearing your school's name on your chest and on your hat, and that matters. And when you move on beyond there, you know, the competition, it's about winning. You know, and so I think that's something that's really rewarding here, to be able to be part of that and expose our guys to that kind of competition that, you know, is really going to prepare them for what's beyond baseball after their careers.
Right. So just speaking of just moving up in the career, for your experience, what has been the biggest differences physically in terms of just what you're putting into the sport mentally? How you're thinking of the sport in terms of moving from high school to college to professional? What is the hardest part of just making that leap in terms of just who you are as a player?
I mean, I think when you look at the players that have success at high school and then college and move on, I think there's obviously a baseline of athleticism that's got to be there. You know, as a college recruiter, when you're evaluating a high school player, you're evaluating do this physical skills project to what the level needs to be. So if you're looking at a Division I athlete, you're looking at guys that can generally run well, right? So there's ways to measure things, right? You're measuring a 60 time. You're just seeing physical strength. How can a guy drive a ball over a fence? You know, can they throw a ball a certain velocity, right? There's some benchmarks of, if you can't do these basic things, then the skill level, the ability to play the game kind of can't happen yet, you know? And you see that in all sports. You know, when you look at Division I basketball and you look at a shooting guard at a Division I school, he might be 6'6 and have handles and be able to drop threes. And you go to a Division III school, that guy can also dribble and shoot threes, but maybe he's 6'2, you know. And the more physical guy just has a little more leeway if they have the same skill set. So you see that dynamic happen in the recruiting process, where you have to have a baseline of ability. But then what's really most important is you got to be able to play the game, you know. And I think what you see is what's challenging about the process is it's very easy to measure the physical things. And some of the rankings and things that come out on social media sometimes are very easily, you can curate a list of talented players based on simple metrics, but baseball is a challenging sport to really objectively say who the better player is. And I think that clouds the waters in this process. So what you're seeing now is kids moving on to college. The transfer portal makes mobility amongst players much greater than it ever has been. You're seeing Division I baseball squeezed on both ends. They've got fifth-year transfers from COVID eligibility. You've got transfers from every level coming to Division I. The MLB draft has been pinched. There's less players getting drafted out of college, so there's more talented pro players still in college. And so the level of competition on a Division I roster, which is 35 to 40, the number keeps changing a little bit, every single one of those guys is really, really good. And what separates the guys getting on the field are now who can actually play the game. And I think there's talented players who are getting exposed for their lack of ability to play the game. And then there's guys that, you know, maybe were at a D3 school and then they physically developed and they make that jump. And so they're jumping into Division I, and my alma mater, one of their catchers, was at Salisbury University, Division III, very good Division III program. And he jumps right in. He's sitting in the middle of the order, hitting a ton of homers, catching every day for a top 10 team in the country at the Division I level. So I think that speaks to the parity in college sports and how talented the players are. And that talent can come from any level. And then you're seeing the same thing trickle up to pro level, you know, and the types of players that have success at the next level. You know, there's a baseline of talent that has to be there. And then what you really see is identifying who really has the ability to play the game and compete and translate those skills to competition.
Yeah, so we're going to go back to LaSalle for a second. What have been some of your favorite parts of just getting to meet a bunch of players that come through here, of being able to compete for LaSalle? That might be different than college or the pro level. What are some of your favorite parts or favorite experiences that you've had thus far here at LaSalle?
I think when kids are younger, there's more purity to it. You know, I think as you get older, it becomes more of a job, more of a requirement, even at the college level. I think I really miss the college level for a similar reason. You see a kid develop from a freshman to a senior, see that growth individually. You see the same thing in high school, except it's an even bigger jump from a freshman to senior. So it's always really rewarding to watch the change in maturity level, physicality, skill from year to year. And every year there are players that at the end of the spring, I'm saying, all right, here's where they are. Here's where I think they might be. And then 6 months later, 8, 9 months later, or the following tryouts, to see almost a completely different version of that player in that period of time is really, really cool to see. To see a kid really figure it out, see a kid come out of their shell a little bit and start to have that identity of who they are as a person and a player. I think it's really rewarding, you know. And if you have, as a coach, if you can have a small piece of that, that's pretty cool. But oftentimes it's, you know, I'm a small piece and I'm not these kids are putting in a lot of work outside of LaSalle, you know, and to watch them have success and then to get to enjoy that success and in some cases maybe leap ahead of a player that might have been ahead of them the year prior. You know, I think that's really neat to see. And I'm constantly reminded as a coach to really always keep an open mind about where that growth is going to be. What a player is today can be very different than what they are a week, a month, a year from now. And to always objectively step back and say, what version are they right now? And evaluate that. And sometimes it doesn't change. Sometimes kids are what they are and they continue to be. But I've always been really pleasantly surprised by the changes you see from a high school player from year to year and sometimes week to week. It's pretty fun to watch and be a part of.
Yeah, I agree. I think high school is where it sort of starts to, the competition gets so much more, just so much better than from the middle school to whatever travel teams you're playing in middle school. So when you get to high school, how eager you are to play the game at the next level, I think gets challenged. So the guys that really just love the game in any sport, so for you, the guys that just love baseball so much and they just put so much time and effort into this, they are going to make that jump. So I think high school is where you first start to see the differences between not just the guys who have the best ability, but the guys who just love the game so much.
I think you hit it right on the head. And I tell people all the time, you know, if you want to pursue college baseball, you better love baseball.
Right, yeah.
There are a lot of kids in our program now that are really talented that like baseball. It's an activity. It's something they like to do. And there are kids in here that love it, and it drives what they do. And the kids that love it should keep pursuing it. And that level may be a lower level in college, but if you love it, keep playing it. If you like it, keep playing it, but maybe you don't have to make it a job by going to the next level. College baseball can be, you give up a lot. You know, there are things in my experience at Virginia that I never got a chance to do. You know, in the spring, a big tradition is to go to Fox Fields. There's a big race weekend that's like one of those rite of passages for a Virginia student. I've never done that. Never been there. Don't even know where it is, right? Because I was always playing. Now, I would happily give that up for the experience I have because I loved it, right? And I think when guys are deciding what they want to do, whether it's in sports or, frankly, in a job in the real world, like, don't take the job because of the money, right? And you might like it. Sometimes it's out of necessity. You have to do that. But at some point, when you find the thing you love to do, make money doing that and find a way to monetize that, you know? And I tell people all the time, I feel really lucky to be at LaSalle, where I legitimately look forward to Monday morning. I got three young kids and they drive me nuts on the weekend, which is, you know, it can be stressful as a young parent. And sometimes looking forward to Monday, you know, all right, I can reset. But the reality is I love getting in the classroom. You know, it invigorates me. There's always new challenges, and I love getting on the field with our players. And so, you know, and I have a way to help support my family as a teacher, to make enough money to do that, you know? And I think that's what I hope our kids figure out. I think in the travel ball ecosystem, they're always being told where they need to be. They give up a lot of weekends over the summer. You know, all these birthday parties and things they would do that they don't do because they're committed to a travel team. And I see guys get to senior year and realize, boy, I like baseball, but boy, I don't want to give it all up. And some of these guys are making amazing decisions to go to Penn State and play club, right? Justin Machida was on our 21 championship team and won a national championship with Penn State's club team a year ago and had an amazing experience doing that. And he certainly would have had a ton of opportunities to go pursue college baseball at lower levels and have an impact, but he wanted that big, he wanted the experience of being a student at Penn State. That was important to him, right? He loved baseball, but understood he could get a version of that as a club player there, and he's made the most of that. So I respect the hell out of guys that understand what they want and need and go down those paths, you know. But I think you hit it right in the head. If you love it, it's going to drive your work. If you like it, you might be good enough to continue liking it and being and playing, but at some point, somebody who loves it will be equal to you and they'll pass you.
Right. All right, Coach. Well, I think that's all I got for you today. Again, thank you so much for coming on here. I really appreciate it. Thank you all for listening. We're going to keep making more of these. We're going to have more people on. We're going to have a great time doing this. So, Coach, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.